Gorgeous George and Goes, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on!
From the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada, this is MMA Junkie Radio.
We rollin'!
What's going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goes reporting for duty here on a Monday morning. Hope you all had a nice Christmas or whatever it is, whatever else it is you celebrate. Happy that. And if you didn't, then I hope you enjoyed your Chinese food. Here on today's show, obviously there's no fights to recap because none of the major orgs were in play this past week, rightfully so. I think we had a great enough year in 2021, a busy enough year in 2021. It's kind of nice to have a few weeks off, especially with UFC and Bellator. Of course, PFL does a season, one championship. They're up to their own antics out there in Asia. But you guys know what makes this sport move. It's the UFC, and they're off until January 15th. But that doesn't mean the news stops. A lot of interesting tidbits, some Twitter beefs, some news nuggets, and we're going to cover all that here in the next hour or so. So buckle up, Junkie Nation. It's MMA Junkie Radio on a Monday, December 27th. Real quick, Gus, before we get into the news, how was your Christmas?
It was good. It was a good Christmas. Last night kind of sucked. My team got shellacked, but other than that, it was a fun week. But you?
Did you win or lose when it came to Christmas gifts this year?
Yeah, it might have been a 10-8 round, I think. I think about it.
You lost?
Yeah, but that can still be salvaged, I think.
Doesn't mom and dad usually make up for it, though, where everyone else may come up short? They usually come strong.
Well, that's what I mean, where that can still be kind of fixed, you know? But if, right. if you're going the night of, yeah, it was a beatdown. It was a bloodbath.
All right. Well, I had a fun Christmas. It for me, towards
wait, the wait, end. Wait. What about your gifts?
My gifts, I'm pretty happy, I think. Yeah, I'm pretty happy with what I got. And I think I got okay response to what I gave. So, yeah, I mean, let me think here. I guess if I want to give an actual score, I hate 10-10s. So, I would say... Oh, no. Yeah. I think 10-9 me. Yeah, 10-9 me. Barely, though, just because we have this aunt and uncle that be playing games. They got antics as well.
Jesus.
That may have made the difference there.
We've talked about them plenty of times on this show. But to keep the legend going, this year, George and I received a travel alarm clock. Travel. So here's what happens. You pack this thing in your suitcase. It ain't small. It ain't tiny. It's going to take up some room. You pack it in your suitcase. You got to remember, my travel alarm clock. You grab it. You put it in your suitcase. You either need AA batteries, AAA batteries, which you never have, whatever it is you need. Or you need to find a power source. So when you get to where your destination is, you got to pull that bad boy out. You got to wind it. Remember, it's not digital, by the way. So you got to make sure it's on the same time zone you're on. Set it. Okay, this is when I want to wake up. Put it on your nightstand. Hope it works. Who the fuck is going to go through all that? Come on, get real. That's what we got.
Exactly. We have our phones, and even though we turn them off when you're international, they adjust to your time zone already once you're in the Wi-Fi. They work. They do it all now. And if you don't trust them, then more than likely you were at a hotel. You can get the wake up service that way. That's even old school, to tell you the truth. I bet you if you did it, they'd go, what? Wake up who? I mean, they just, like, everyone works off their phones now. Plus, most hotels have those clocks in the room to begin with. But I guess if you're staying at someone's house, I mean, there's no need for it. I think we got re-gifted. The only thing I'll give this aunt and uncle is they're kind, and they will not let you ever pay for a dinner or anytime we go out like that. That's just that they're that definitely doesn't go down. So I guess things even out. But you just got to get to those dinners, you know. Yeah. But with the pandemic and all, to feel like I woke up today and I'm okay, then that's good. You know, this Omicron spreading, I don't want it to spread to those that it can affect, which is the more senior people of our family. And I think we're so far so good. But now we just got to get through this little wave. And I think 2022 is definitely going to be a lot brighter.
I hope.
But anyway, yeah, it's got to be, goes, because last year at this time, we had the vaccine existed and it was just getting put into play. And remember, healthcare workers were going to be first.
Mm-hmm.
So we had no hosts. Then radio hosts. We had no defense at the time. We were just being super, super careful. That's why we didn't have a Christmas. We didn't go back. Oh, wait. They came this way, here. Right? Yeah, they came. It was just us four. So, you know, we did it that way. But this year we have vaccines and boosters. So we have a defense. And now that pill, who knows? But this isn't the Dr. Fauci show, so let's get going here. You know, we're just going to randomly go through a lot of these news stories that popped up during the... We weren't even gone a week, folks. Honestly, we just took off Thursday show. Well, maybe that is a week, right? We do Monday, take off Thursday, come back Monday. But here we are. And like I say, it's going to be super random. Kevin Lee, we knew he was headed for the Eagle FC promotion goes, and he was going to fight at 165 pounds. This is on March 11th. He's fighting Diego Sanchez. Okay, so now we have a matchup. I think they're in different parts of their career, and Diego like could honestly announce his retirement after this fight. And Kevin Lee is a ranked 155er. You know, he has to leave our rankings. He had to leave the USA Today Sports MMA Junkie rankings because we kept holding a place for him, but he kept dabbling at welterweight. And you can only do that for so long. And the reason is why. Because you can't take it out of my head that he's not one of the top 155-pounders in the world. But you just have to defend your spot after a certain time. And you can get a few benefits. Like when he tried it with RDA. Then he came back. Then he went back to Daniel Rodriguez. You know. And then when you're losing these fights. And then when you go and sign your next fight in a promotion where you're not going to be fighting those ranked fighters. Plus, it sounds like you're headed for another weight class. That's why he was removed from our, you know, from ours. But what I mean is Lee is automatically a contender when he goes to a new promotion, even if it's at 165 pounds. But Diego, bless his heart, a legend of the sport for sure, a future Hall of Famer. He's just way past his prime. But it's name recognition for Eagle FC, and I think that's a smart thing.
Yeah, it's enough to make you want to tune in and see what's going to happen. But I think we all know what's going to happen. I don't know that Diego has these skills to a level anymore that's going to catch anyone by surprise. He's a lot slower now. I don't know that he hits as hard. I mean, he's always got submissions. Kevin Lee has definitely fallen to some of those, but I just think Kevin Lee's pressure and he's never going to give Diego an opportunity to even get off. So I think we know what's going to happen in this fight.
Yeah. Now that's a different card from the one Rashad Evans is headlining. See, Eagle FC is debuting in the USA on January 28th. He now has an opponent, by the way, Rashad Evans. He's facing Gabriel Checo out of Las Vegas. This is Eagle FC 44. And they had a press conference out in Miami recently, and we didn't know the opponent. Now we do, but that's their card in January. The next one with Kevin Lee, who was at that press conference, Kevin Lee, where he's going to be debuting. That's the one I talked about in March. So it's two different cards. Hopefully that, you know, now you know exactly where each fighter's headed. It straightens it out is what I'm trying to say. All right, goes Joe Rogan on his podcast had something interesting to say. And I think we all kind of, for the most part, were nodding our heads and saying, yeah, okay, brother, we get it. But still, people read it, people talked about it, and it's basically his way of calling the fights, what he feels, you know, how he calls the fight. He says, I try to be fair always with my commentary, you know, so I don't know that he's ever been questioned to not be that way. He's a legend of our sport as well. I just think this is on the heels of what happened with DC and Dom, and that's why, you know, people are talking about commentators and how they call fights and who's our favorite. It's always a topic. Anik's a stud. Anik's like immune to all this. You know, he's so great and so well prepared and so well respected that he never has to really make these types of statements. Have you noticed that?
Yeah. No, he I'm trying to think like who you can compare him to. Almost like Anthony Hopkins or something in the acting world. Like you just don't say bad things about this person. He's or such like a good guy.
Or like an Al Michaels, you know, where he just gets the job done. I remember the only thing you could ever say about Anik was, boy, that guy really loves talking gambling, you know. And if anything, he helped make it so that gambling was the norm, you know, and talked about more openly. Whereas before, I wouldn't say it was a taboo. We talked about it a lot on our show. Al Michaels, in fact, has been dropping little hints on his broadcasts. Because the NFL is a little bit more strict, although not as much as they used to be. But Al Michaels would say, let's say a score was 27-20. Well, that's a bad example. Let's say a score was 38. Well, actually, let's use Goza's score. 56-14 or something like that. You know, the game's not in question, but let's say there's a total in question. Not that I could see an NFL game being that high, but Al Michaels would say, well, I'm sure there's a few people roaring in the sports books in Las Vegas after that field goal. And that would be it. You know, he wouldn't say this was the total. It went over, you know, or anything like that. He would just drop subtle hints. And it kind of did the same thing. He used to get teased about it a little bit, but gambling's so open now that it's no big deal. But going back to Rogan, his complete quote is continuing, like, even if you think that my commentary was biased one way or another, you'll never think I'm disrespectful. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, because when he said it, the first thing I wanted to do in my head was go back and go, well, what about the time? And I started thinking about it, and I was like, maybe I can find something if I really thought about it, but that's not the point. Straight to my head, I can't remember a time where I thought that he was being disrespectful. I think for the most part, he's done a good job. There have been times where maybe I've thought he's been biased, but that's kind of hard to avoid. It really is, especially when you're him, you know, and you're around these fighters so much. That's like a weapon, really, that Joe Rogan has. You know, when he was training out there with Eddie Bravo and some of these guys would come in, that's an extra weapon that you have. You get to be around these fighters. You get to see them, so you have a little bit more insight into specific fighters. And I think he used that to his advantage. So it is a little difficult, but I don't have any problems with Joe Rogan.
I don't either. And plus, look, man, he's probably been doing this about 25 of the 28 years that the UFC's existed, or close to. And for a while there, he did almost every card. And then he tapered off into just the big Fox cards and pay-per-views. Now they're the big ESPN cards and pay-per-views. And now I believe it's just pay-per-views. And even further to that, I believe it's most pay-per-views. He went hunting in October, for crying out loud. He missed the Abu Dhabi ones. There was some he just didn't want to travel to. But he realizes how much he means to the organization. And when Dana calls on him, he's there. You know, Dana has backed him when he wanted to get his comedy specials going. Dana's been an executive producer. It's just that the tables have turned. I think Rogan might even be bigger than, not the UFC, but bigger than Dana White now. At one point, Dana White was probably the UFC's biggest star. Maybe Rogan now. I mean, after Conor, of course. But, I you know, look, in 25 years, if you forced me to go, come on, he doesn't walk on water. Okay, yeah, you're right. You know, there were times where he would really, really push that rubber guard. Not that it got on my tits personally, but you could tell that was kind of like a nod to his gym in Los Angeles when he trained with Eddie Bravo, like Go said. the 10th planet system, which, by the way, he's a black belt. He's a black belt under Jean-Jacques Machado with the gi, and he's a black belt under the 10th planet system, no gi. He's also a black belt in Taekwondo. So I don't have a problem with somebody pushing the agenda of something that they learned, or, you know, a gym, you know, and their strengths, you know. I really don't have a problem with it. Mission control, if you've ever heard him talking about that, that's one of the positions that Eddie Bravo, you know, talks about, neutralizing the opponent. But I would say just jiu-jitsu, it's not – I think everyone's just so well-versed in jiu-jitsu nowadays that it doesn't come into play as much. Like, people can threaten with a Kimura. People can threaten with, you know, possible triangles, throwing the legs up. And do they happen? Of course they do from time to time. But they don't as much as they did back then. But either way, he knows exactly what these moves are like. He's very good at explaining them. So did he fall back on that a little bit? Sure. But Eddie Bravo, at one point, I don't know if they're still as tight, but he regarded him as his best friend. And if his best friend has a system and you have a chance to push it and you're not stretching it, like, he didn't say, oh, look, it's mission control, and he was going for footlock. No, he was in mission control. So, you know, he was back in his bud. All right. And the 10th planet system. Other times, I guess, that I've heard him get criticized is that a choke appears to be too tight, and most of the time they're getting out of it. I'd say, you know, 8 out of 10 times they're getting out of it, whereas Rogan led you to believe possibly that the finish was almost there. But that's not his fault, because if he sees that the technique is good, and usually somebody, you know, can tap to this, but someone was tough enough not to, or they had the defenses not to, then he wasn't exactly wrong. And plus, it adds to the intrigue of the position, you know. So I've never really had a problem with that either. And maybe the last thing would be his schedule and going back to Anik and Cruz and some of the other guys. You know, from my understanding, these announcers probably get in. You know, fighters usually travel on a Tuesday. I would say the announce team probably is there by Wednesday night, and Thursday's meetings with the fighters, or maybe even Tuesday night and Wednesday's meetings with the fighters. And so they have these one-on-ones. They'll bring in Anik, DC, Megan, Sanko, whoever's working it, right? That whole team. Did you ever see, for example, folks, when Diego Sanchez and Joshua Fabia had that confrontation against the team in Abu Dhabi? I think it was Felder, Megan, Brendan, or John, probably John, like that. So that type of a meeting. I think Diego was just finishing his up, and then that's when Joshua Fabia came in, along with their cameraman, Stefan Bonner. But that's pretty open and clear that Rogan doesn't do that. Rogan pretty much flies in private jet, I think Friday, and that's because they want him to host the weigh-ins, and then he spends the night and does Saturday. So he maybe gets accused of not putting in as much homework as the other guys and gals. And I bet you he would probably say that's true. I don't think he could possibly deny it, but it doesn't mean he's unprepared, and it doesn't mean that he can't do an adequate job. So there's me, like, nitpicking. Goes, the guy really is a legend, does a great job.
Yeah, there's really not much. I mean, I guess you could do that to just about anyone except John Anik. But yeah, I mean, you know, usually you have like a comedy show that night or the night of the fight. So I think that's maybe what people point to. But I mean, the guy does his job, man.
Don't you feel like if a fan were to slap Ariane Celeste, let's say a male guy asks to take a picture, she says okay, he probably says something he thinks is witty, she says buzz off, creep, and he were to strike her, think about how many people in the UFC would grab this guy, throw him in the back, and beat the shit out of him. For one, just because they protect theirs. Two, obviously, a man hitting a woman. This goes for even when you see stadium fights. Once it gets to that, oh, man, everyone jumps in and beats up the guy. But I feel like for Anik, it would almost be the same thing. If Anik were to get threatened somehow, so many people would jump to his defense because the guy's so lovable and so respected, and he's done it all in 10 years. And Mike Goldberg was with them for probably, what, two decades? And John Anik, in the 10 years that he's been there, is probably either as beloved as Goldberg ever was or may have even surpassed him.
And it's odd, too, because, you know, like he explained, his contract situation was, it was like year to year, right, or something like that. Like, I don't know. I think he's probably surprised the UFC a little bit in this little tenure. And now I think the fighters and the fans have spoken so highly of him that even if the Dream announcer ever showed up, remember that? I don't even think the UFC would have the balls to kind of say, all right, Anik, you've had your run. Like, that dude's just unstoppable.
I'd love to have beers with Dana White one day and go, hey, who was your fucking dream team already? You know, like, he never really revealed it. They talked about Kellerman, Rome, some combination of those two, Rogan. Who knows what it was going to be? It wasn't Anik, though. And it's Anik now, trust me. But I'd love to know who it was. And then my follow-up question would be, well, let's just say you had it. Do you think it would have panned out as great as this guy played out, you know? And before he'd answer, I'd grab him by the shirt and go, don't lie.
Yeah.
He'd have to admit that it's worked out splendidly with Anik.
He's so professional, man. His voice. You know, the only criticism I'd have, and it's not towards Anik. It's not Anik's fault. But now that you have two men in the booth and their personalities are like a little bigger, there are times when something big happens, you're used to hearing your play-by-play's voice. And he's the one that's voicing what had just happened. But sometimes Rogan's so loud, or Cormier, or whoever, that they almost call that piece of action, where I feel like it should be John Anik's voice that we hear at that moment. That's the only thing that ever bothers me.
Which is what Mauro Ranallo's really good at, is taking over that moment.
Right. Chiavello, too.
Yes, because they're so booming and so over the top, in a good way, by the way, and both different. But yes, they don't have sidekicks that have that big presence like Rogan and Cormier. And it works, man. It works for the three of them. I think they're all happy. And like I say, both Anik and Rogan will be Hall of Famers in the UFC. Anik will probably be a broadcasting Hall of Famer at some point as well. So I'm really, really happy for them. Anik really had it rough at first because that little dark cloud loomed over him. You know, he was not part of the Dream Team. He did talk a little bit about gambling when it made some people uncomfortable. Sure, it's not me, I'll tell you that much. And he earned it, man. He earned it the right way. And now he needs to be spoken of in the way we are, by saying, you know, future Hall of Famer, legend, things like that, because he really punched the clock and did a great job. All right, I digress here a little bit. Want to get to a Twitter beef goes? Yeah. Dan Hooker and John Jones. Hooker, who fights at 155, thinking of going down to 145, against Jones, who fights at 205, and pretty much headed towards, well, I guess we call it 265, heavyweight. These two are never going to square off. But, and these two are so random, you know, African-American guy living in New Mexico against a Kiwi down in New Zealand, part-time, you know, living here in Las Vegas. Just the most random Twitter beef, but they had some exchanges.
It's hard to believe you could even say Twitter beef and Dan Hooker's name in the same sentence. Again, he's kind of like a John Anik, where it's hard, man, to get something like that out of him, because he's such a cool cat, such a nice guy. He's an understanding person. He's such a chill dude. Like, I can't believe that he got involved with this with John Jones. But boy, John Jones makes it easy for you. You know, like, he's giving you layups out there. And Dan Hooker took advantage of him.
Yeah, John had. So this all stems from Chael Sonnen. I think the last time we talked about this, we were saying, hey, let's be careful about how we address this. But it's out there. It's news. But we don't have all the facts. And I'm glad we did it, because I still don't have all the facts. I kept looking and looking. And the only thing I know now is that even though he was arrested at the Four Seasons, which is a part of Mandalay Bay where Chael has traditionally stayed a lot, you're not in the Four Seasons if that's not where your room is, right? It's like a branch of the Mandalay Bay Tower, and it's just rooms. There's no casino there or anything, but it's five star. And so if he was down in that area, that's probably where his room was. Apparently he's in town filming a movie or something like that is what I'm hearing. But this event, the street fight or whatever you want to call it, took place at the Luxor. That's kind of the only other details that I know goes. But through what I heard from Brendan Schaub, social media, a little bit on Twitter, he beat up guys that were disrespectful to his wife. Mm-hmm. He didn't touch a woman because at first we heard a couple, meaning not a couple of males, but meaning a man and a woman. And that's where I think John Jones jumped in and said, I'm not going to take you down the way you took me down. But well, look who put his hands on a woman, something like that. He intimated that. That doesn't appear to be the case. He was just basically defending his wife. And it's five charges. He didn't spend the night in jail. And he'll probably have to answer for those. I'm sure they'll either just get pled down or who knows what'll happen. But I think it's just basically a street fight. Maybe there might be something civilly. Who knows? You know, people take advantage of that. They know you got money and they may sue. But see, that's the part where I really don't know the details. Anyway, because of all that, somehow Dan Hooker, you know, got involved a little bit. Here's some of the exchanges that they had.
Did Twitter lay that out for you in the most confusing manner?
It did, yeah. It did. I was triggered by your... Let me see here. Here's one thing Dan said to him. Well, I'm not going to do the whole thing. Not that it was much, but... Dan said, I was triggered by your disingenuous attempt to bring attention to Chael's situation. He was arrested for defending his wife. You were arrested for assaulting yours. And then he wrote emojis, apples and oranges. So basically saying, you know, this wasn't a similar case to what you're trying to make it sound like, that you're going to be a gentleman about and not bring down Chael. But I think Dan's saying, well, it wasn't the same case. Mm-hmm. And here's a few things that actually he also said, life hack. If you don't beat up your wife, family events will be more enjoyable. Merry Christmas, bitch. That's what Dan Hooker said to him. John Jones said to him, bro, your career is simply not panning out. That's my response. LOL. Another time he told him, every opportunity you've had to make a name for yourself and be closer to your boy Izzy, you dropped the ball. You can't achieve greatness, so you hop online and attack someone who has. Sounds about right. I would say that in the end, Dan got the best of him because of the first one where he said, Chael was arrested for defending his wife. You were arrested for assaulting yours. By that, I mean, if everybody's gathered around and these two guys are kind of like 8 Mile style, they're at the shelter ragging on each other, you know, no holds barred, anything goes. I think Dan Hooker, you know, I think when Future says, how about a round of applause for Dan Hooker, you know, everybody roars, and then one for John Jones, he gets a roar, but I think Dan Hooker's roar would just be a little bit louder because that shot about the wife was probably one of those like, oh, you know, like, oh, no, he didn't. He went there, that type of thing. And even though John had a couple good shots at, you know, his coming up short in some big fights, I still think the other one was more like, oh, you know, like that one hurts a little bit more. What are your thoughts? I mean, if we separate the two then and say competition-wise, John had a couple good digs in, but overall-wise, I just think I think Dan might have got him.
Well, John did have some good digs competition-wise, but that wasn't the issue, right? That's not what we were talking about. Right. So he had to go there to make up for what happened to him in the actual argument. That's kind of the version of, well, yeah, well, you're fat, you know, or something stupid. We're right. Like, we're not even talking about that. Like, we're talking about something else. So, it's a deflection, basically. So, it's just, man, like, all right. So when John tweeted that first tweet, if we were all in a room and he said, "Hey, check it out, look what Chael did, I'm gonna tweet this," the first thing I would have said was, "John, don't tweet that, because you don't know what the hell was going on yet."
Right.
You know, you got to get the facts first. You're going to look really stupid if this comes back and it's not what you're saying it is. There's just nobody to do that for him. Or there are, and he just doesn't care. You know, he says, "Nah, this is going to be cool." And who knows? There's so many people there to pat the guy on his back and say, "You're awesome," that maybe that is what happens.
Yeah, I would say exactly the same thing. I would stop him from doing it. Because it's still fresh what happened with him and his wife. And even at worst, if Chael had done that, why does he need to put his family through reminders and horrible comments that people are going to leave when they say, "Well, you did the same thing." So let's just say, like I said, it was 10-10. It was even between them. His daughters are older now, man. Like, wouldn't he want to just kind of bury that? Mm-hmm. And just, you know, luckily for him, his wife forgave him. They're moving on. It's Christmas. Like, why bring this back?
Right.
I just don't get it, man. Like I say, even if Chael had done it, I just don't get why he would do it. Like, what's the lesson here? You know, I don't know. I think if Chael had done that, Chael's already learning from probably sitting in a cell and the embarrassment of what's going to happen. His family might even fall apart. He doesn't need that zinger from John anyway, or that lesson, but John's family doesn't need this to be, you know, shut on again.
You know, like, if you're John Jones's kids, you might've gotten teased for all this at school.
Oh, right? Hell yeah.
And then it kind of goes away because people start doing dumb things and it goes away. But then you show up again on Monday and kids again go, "Man, your dad's tripping again. I can't believe it." And it all starts again. Like, I don't understand. It's just, it's really selfish is really what it is. It's all about me is basically what his motto has been.
Yeah, he got thumped by Dan Hooker on that one. And what's funnier is the picture that Junkie put up. It's Dan with his tongue hanging out. He's holding the Kiwi flag, the New Zealand flag. He's sticking his tongue out. But it just kind of goes with, like, it looks like that's what he said at that moment. You know what I mean? Junkie does a good job of capturing that.
Mm-hmm. To me, the most frustrating thing of all is the fact that John Jones, had he played his cards right, would be almost like John Anik, where he would just be untouchable. Because he's untouchable in the cage. You know what I mean? Like, he could be one of those guys that could just always go, "Come on, dog. Like, you're really coming at me. Look at my record. Look what I've done in this sport. Shut the fuck up," right? But he's done so many bonehead things that, like, he just gives people ammunition. And even at that, like, he could just stay quiet and not get involved in all this. But he likes to get in there and bump with these guys. And, oh, God, it's infuriating, man.
You know what no one I know has been talking about? Mm. He had an awesome day donating to the kids at Bear Foundation. And it's him in a video at a Christmas tree with some gifts. And I'm more than certain that he probably bought some kids, some underprivileged kids, some gifts, or he made some sort of a donation. And that's a beautiful thing. Don't get me wrong. But I haven't heard anyone in the MMA circles talking about that.
See, that's awesome, man. That's good. That's good for him to do that.
Yep. Instead, they're talking about the Twitter exchange with Dan Hooker and the shots that he fired at Chael Sonnen that don't appear to be that big of a deal, because Chael did what a lot of people would do, and that's, you know, defend their wife. I mean, I don't know to what extent, you know, did these people physically threaten her? Or say some things and he, you know, maybe blew a gasket. You can't go around punching everybody that says something to your wife, you just can't. Sometimes you just have to walk away. But regardless, even if you did, I don't think people would have a problem with it. And, you know, he's one of the toughest men on earth, so it's a lot easier for him to do that, you know, to just say, yeah, I'm not going to have this, you know. But you know, Luck sort of to four seasons, there's plenty of time to cool off, too, goes. I kind of want to know a few more details, don't you?
Yeah, I do. I would like to know a little bit more.
Now, I'm thinking four seasons. They kept saying he was pounding on a door there. And did he recognize them from Luxor? Did he walk them back to Four Seasons? Maybe Chael's not even staying at Four Seasons. Maybe he's staying at Delano or Mandalay Bay, or maybe staying somewhere else. I don't know. I'm trying to piece it together. See, MMA Inc., where Chael Sonnen might still be represented. I don't know any longer because he's no longer a fighter, and I know him and Ryan Parsons do a lot of stuff together. But MMA Inc. had a connection at Mandalay Bay, and a lot of their fighters used to stay there, Chael Sonnen being one of them. That's why when I heard Four Seasons, I go, that's probably where he's staying. I could see that. But, you know, now that I'm hearing the incident took place in the Luxor, why was he arrested at Four Seasons? You know, did the police hunt him down to his room and then, you know, they put him in handcuffs and walked him away? Was he pounding on a door there? And I thought the incident took place there. But, you know, I don't know, were the cops pounding on his door to get him out? That's where I'm a little shady on, but now I'm hearing that all this took place at the Luxor. So I'm trying to figure out, you know, kind of piece it together. Because I've never known Chael to be a hothead. I've only seen him lose his temper one time. He boasts about never having a drink of alcohol, and I think he even says he doesn't cuss. Now, granted, I get Chael's a gimmick guy and all that. I'm sure there's been an F-bomb that has been unleashed at some point, but there's not many on record. But one time he was losing weight, and that's when fighters are the moodiest. And I believe it was the Tito fight, and Mark Raimondi, who was with MMA Fighting at the time, said something to him. Chael responded, and then Mark kind of got him in one of those gotcha moments, and Chael just looked at him, and I think he said something like, oh, this interview's fucking over, or something like that. And he let an F-bomb slip, and it caught my attention because, like I say, you don't hear that too much from him. So I don't know him to be a hothead. I think of him as someone being more composed and calm. And if something happened at that moment and he felt like he needed to defend his wife, bravo, Chael. But now what I'd like to know is what happened from Luxor to Four Seasons. That's a long walk. You know, mm-hmm. The hotels are neighboring hotels, but unless you're running it, that's probably a good 10 to 15 minute walk.
Yeah. At least.
Yeah. I don't know. But John Jones, stay away from Twitter. But I will tip my hat since I found this. And he had an awesome day on December 20th donating to the kids at Bear Foundation. That was cool. In fact, goes Dana White, I believe, paid for 100 families and their Christmas, you know, and they're making their purchases for meals. I guess whatever mm-hmm. store that he happened to be at, I think he paid for 100 families or something like that. A lot of football players and basketball players, LeBron, they paid off layaways. When they were at the store, they said, I got the next 100, you know, same thing, next 100. That is awesome. That Very is the cool. kind of stuff I love to talk about. The layaway thing must be like, I mean, because look, most people that are in there to buy the 100 or 200, they got it, right? And so they're going to buy their hams and their turkeys and all the sides and drinks. And the people that did a layaway, that's a tight budget. You know, you're paying something off. I know a lot of millennials, a lot of Generation X or Z might not even know, but a layaway is just something you can purchase. Like in December, you say, I want this TV. It's $300. You put it on layaway. You give them the first 100 and then another 100 at, you know, like 6 weeks later. And then the last one, whenever it is that you determine you're going to pick it up. So think about what the hardship that you may have to be in when you have to do something in layaway. And so to now come in and make that last payment and someone tells you it's been taken care of, that must have been a tremendous moment for those people.
There was, I want to say it was a country music star. Or, I don't know. I'm probably going to get this wrong. But they paid off servicemen, like 300 servicemen in different bases, their Christmas gift bills and stuff like that. It was really, really cool. Yeah, a lot of people doing some good stuff out there.
I love that. Yeah. If you hear of any, let me know via social media at MMA Junkie George. I just love to read it. At MMA Junkie George on Twitter, probably the easiest, or Instagram or whatever, and just tag me. I'd love to see stuff like that.
Ensign Inouye, I saw, did something, one of his missions, you know, where he goes and takes clothes and stuff to kids. I think this one in particular was school stuff, school supplies.
Man, the most I can do is someone's behind me at Starbucks. I might say, oh, I got his too, or hers too.
Shoes for orphans. That's what he did.
Did he?
Yeah. It looks like, I'll show you a picture of his truck here. You could see it. That's his truck filled with shoes for orphans.
Man, that's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. All right. So let's get around. I want to spend a little bit of time on Tyron Woodley. You know, DC question why Tyron Woodley is paying $5,000 for the best meme of him getting knocked out by Jake Paul. And I questioned it, except I kept it to myself. Now, DC, obviously a big public figure, he was like, what the hell is he doing, you know? But I thought it, so I want to talk about it. I'm sure you probably thought it as well, but in my opinion, I think Woodley is trying to lessen the blow of that vicious KO. Because remember, Woodley says, I'm from the streets. He's a college-educated man who is trying to slowly move into entertainment and has, you know, acting and stunt work and rapping. And I think he wants to keep it going. But I don't care what anyone says, you lose a little bit of your flavor, street cred, swag, whatever you want to call it, when you take a loss. Why do you think Conor McGregor melts down the way he does? Because when you're winning and you're it, you really do walk on water. In fact, Conor getting called out on that $500,000 check, that was one of the worst things that ever happened to him, aside from the losses. That was embarrassing to him amongst those that he rubs elbows with. That pissed him off, and I think that's what started, you know, the horrible year for him, because he basically could have taken these two losses and just, I lost to Dustin Poirier, but we're 1-1, and in the third one, I broke my leg. And I think if he would have stayed nice, Conor, the guy that donated the $500,000, the guy that was pleasant with Dustin Poirier, and just rode that out, I think everybody would have been wishing him a happy holidays. How's the leg? But instead, because he went heel, and because he's not taking these L's like a man and he's acting kind of like a jerk, it's probably been a longer year for him. But again, kind of like the same, the John Jones thing. He just opens his mouth and says and does things in the worst possible way. And nobody's feeling them. We're feeling you when you're winning. Trust me, you get a pass usually. But when you're losing, you know, it's a lot different. There's a lot of people that are ready to cash those checks, you know. But anyway, when I was getting back to Woodley, I think that was Woodley's way goes of like a deflection.
Yeah.
You know, he went straight into that was a horrible knockout goes because of the day and age of social media, the memes and him collapsing. But that's probably humiliating to him. Luckily, he got paid a lot of money. He's also iced a lot of people. But the minute he started telling people, hey, I've knocked a few people out too, I could tell right then and there this was super embarrassing to him. And now he has to remind us that he's done it. And at the same time, then he went off and created this contest. And I'm like, what are you doing? You know, just shake the guy's hand. I liked what Masvidal did. Masvidal said, man, no one's ever knocked me out. This guy's got my number. Congrats to him. You know, we haven't heard from him since. And now he's looking to fight again. And notice Masvidal doesn't get too much hate. I don't see that picture of him splattered on the octagon after Kamaru knocked him out. I don't see that too often. He kind of did it the right way.
Yeah, I think what it comes down to, I mean, it's pretty much exactly what you said. I think, you know, when you were a kid and you tease people or whatever, the ones that reacted the most was you piled on even more. Like, you couldn't wait to do the next joke and the next joke. If you just kind of acted like it didn't bother you, then people just stop doing it because that's not the reaction they want to get out of you. I think that's what Tyron's trying to make people believe, is that it doesn't bother him. But it's got to. I mean, who wouldn't? Who would that not bother? That's the worst scenario you could think of going into a situation in boxing, is to get laid out cold like that. And it happened to him in front of a lot of people, against a guy that a lot of people thought he should have done that to him. So yeah, you're right. It's a deflection, but it just keeps the spotlight on that incident instead of waiting for that to go away. And somebody else is going to take that mantle. You know, this is just the world we live in. It's usually not that long. When we grew up, I think it took about a week, maybe two, before somebody did something dumb. Now it's like hours, days.
Yeah, you know, when he lost to Covington, that was a big deal because it was an ATT beef, and I don't care what anyone says, it was a black and white beef. You know, both guys ran their mouth. But remember, I think in that one, he cracked a rib. Fight wasn't going too well for him anyway, but he cracked the rib. But because he kind of stayed quiet, it was not as big of a deal. And if you notice, I don't remember Colby really letting him have it too much. You know, hi, I beat you, I told you. Yeah, I don't remember too much of that. He kind of just left it alone because, again, if you don't show that it bothers you and if you're pretty much respectful in defeat, there's really not so much you can do. I think even the winner realizes, man, I shared some time with this guy, and not many people are willing to spend, you know, 25 minutes, 50 minutes locked in a cage doing this. There's got to be a certain amount of respect that goes the other way. And they kind of leave it at that. You know, Kamaru hasn't given Colby too much of a problem. Hell, he's even said that's the best fight I've ever fought. He's been pretty respectful as well because they were able to kind of hug it out. But I think when you kind of start making excuses or reminding people of your better days, which is something Connor did as well, and Tyron, and even John, although John hasn't lost, he only seems to lose outside the octagon. More people come at you. And the blueprint is there, and I don't understand why some of these athletes keep falling for it.
Yeah, it's odd, man. It really is. But I feel bad for Tyron at times because had all this not happened, I mean, he's got a career that a lot of fighters would want to have. You know, he would represent a lot of things in the sport, but it's gotten to the point where this little tail end of the careers has really been damaging, I think, a little bit to his legacy.
I agree. And he doesn't seem to want to consider stopping. He also kind of gets put off when someone asks him that, which I get. He was getting asked that more when it had just happened. And again, he was probably embarrassed and he was trying to flex, stick his chest out and say, hey, look, did you all forget what I've done or whatever? But, you know, he's 39 years old. He has an opportunity to possibly make it in Hollywood, but it's just the old sad story of so many doors open for you when you're on top. You know, every week goes, I used to see Tyron on TMZ. What happened to that?
Yeah, I think it just goes away. They do different things with people for little periods of time. You know the girl that cuts my hair? She used to have a segment on TMZ, believe it or not.
Did she really?
Yeah.
What was it?
I think she called into a show once and they just thought she was really funny. So from then on, whenever somebody would mess up in Hollywood, they would call her and she would just go on there and start ranting.
Nice. Send me some YouTubes if she's ever shown you or anything like that. I'd love to see it.
She's got some. She showed it to me one time.
So yeah, so back to Tyron. Look, I will say this, goes. Hector Lombard recently did an interview with John Morgan, and Lombard still wants to fight Woodley. I would like to see that, to tell you the truth. Remember they had a little incident out at Bare Knuckle And apparently this is another ATT thing. And Lombard actually started being a little bit more public about what happened. I think they could build something into this. Now, does that mean I want to see Tyrone fight? Well, not really. But I'll never tell a man how to make his money. I mean, he's a grown man, and if he feels like he's healthy enough to get in there and compete, then what are you going to do? You know, if he asked me, what do you think? I'd say, man, as long as you're getting yourself checked out. But a lot of athletes involved in combat sports, you know, when they take these KOs, it can be really, really change your future, you know, and seems like you've been paid well towards the end. Perhaps that should be it, you know, but please get yourself checked out. I mean, that's all I could give him, honestly. He would never ask me, but if he did, that's what I would tell him. But if he signed, we're going to cover it. And if he signed against Lombard, I think it'd be pretty big for BKFC. It'd be pretty big for them. So I'll give this, the shine on Woodley still exists a little bit. Maybe not for MMA and maybe not for celebrity boxing, but definitely in bare knuckle, I think there's a fight there waiting for him.
I think that's a saving grace, to be honest. I like that. I think bare knuckles contracts aren't really like, they don't really tie you down, and which I think is smart because you just kind of live for the moment. Like, I don't know that a run from Tyron Woodley is that valuable at BKFC, but settling this beef would be. So I think, yeah, if he went over there and fought and did that, I think it would be a saving grace a little bit. And then if you could just add on a couple MMA fights, a couple wins here and there, and then ride off into the sunset, I think you would be good.
A fight was made recently, goes with Askar Askarov versus Kai Kara France. Remember, Kai Kara France says, I'm not fighting until it's for the title. And we kind of said, I don't know about that play, fella. I like Kai Kara France. We had a fun interview with him. I'd love to talk to him again, but I just had this feeling it wasn't going to happen. For one, Figueredo versus Brandon Moreno, they got their fight coming up. And I'm not even going to play the card where I say, and if it's a barn burner, if there's controversy, blah, blah, blah. Look, this is going to be their third fight. And they're 1-1-1. Wait a minute. Yeah. No. So Brandon's got a draw with Davison and a win over Davison. This is going to be the third fight. If Davison were to win, you could do a fourth fight, like with what Connor and Poirier want to do, except it's pretty clear Poirier beat him 2 times, but Connor can play the old, well, my leg broke. You never know what would have happened. But I don't think we're going to see Figueredo and Moreno running back anytime soon, even if Figueredo were to win, just because I think the UFC would be enough already. That's 3 straight.
Yeah.
But what this does do is I think it sheds a little light that Alexander Pantoja might be next for the winner of that fight. Hell, he might even be the substitute for all we know, because sometimes that's a little covert operation that they send those guys on. You only find out on fight week. But I think that's what that is. If it isn't, then it's because Pantoja is just has an injury, and the winner of Kai Kara France and Askar Askarov will fight the winner of Davison Figueiredo and Brandon Moreno. But I believe it's the other way around. Now, one thing that stands out is Pantoja's win over Brandon Moreno. And of course, with us hearing that the UFC is going to Rio in May, then I believe if Figueiredo were to win, him versus Pantoja might be pretty big. Brazil versus Brazil, you know, as well. Who knows? I was just putting my thinking cap on in that flyweight division.
The flyweight division's been a lot of fun, man. And I like, who was it? Somebody did a cool breakdown. Oh, why is my mind slipping? I'll figure it out. But something kind of funny happened in the flyweight division this weekend.
Goes, I think you and I should do our own awards, or I may just do my own. I don't know, because as a staff, I love all my junkies. But I'm just not agreeing with them on some stuff, you know, and I think I might want to do my own. One of the ones that we seem to butt heads on is comeback of the year. And the comeback of the year is tough because in traditional sports, when I was growing up, the comeback of the year was somebody who had a shitty year the year before and came back and had a hell of a year.
Mm-hmm.
in the last 20, 30 years, it's kind of evolved a little bit, and it could be someone came back from a serious injury. That's a comeback as well, and that's good. And it could also mean, man, someone was getting their ass kicked in the middle of a fight and came back and won. So there's like three different versions. The injury version, he had a shitty year, and then he came back and he had a great year, and then he was getting his ass kicked and then turned it around and won the fight.
That's a recipe for chaos.
That's tough. It really, really is tough. And again, I just grew up more with, you know, the guy that couldn't hit a curveball to save his life, batted 230, you know, and then the next year he's batting 300, 40 home runs, 110 RBI, blah blah blah, whatever. You go, man, that's a comeback right there. It was all based on those types of statistics season to season. But when Dominic Cruz came back after 3.5 years and beat up Takei Mizugaki, that was one hell of a comeback as well. You know, GSP did it as well. I understand these. It's not that I don't understand them, but I feel like it's almost like we should have three different categories. Like maybe one of them, the rally of the year. Maybe one guy or gal rallied to come back in the middle of a fight. And then maybe the adversity award to the one that had a career setback of an injury, or for example, the Korean Zombie. Didn't he have to go away for 2 or 3 years to serve the military in South Korea? Yeah, that, you know, that's another different type of a comeback. He wasn't injured, but he basically honored and respected what how they do it in South Korea. Maybe a suspension, but I don't know if people would be too partial to those. Like, oh, he was out for 4 years because he cheated and he came back. Nah,
yeah, that won't work.
Yeah, that one won't really work. I was happy for Jessica Penne, who kind of fought for hers. There's certain examples, you know, that are a little bit more palatable, I guess. But yeah, usually those aren't going to work. But it could just be someone that had retired to raise a family, you know, become a mom or whatever, and then they came back. I don't know. But I almost feel like I wouldn't mind splitting those three up and just giving them different labels, but not putting them all under the same umbrella.
Yeah, no, they have to. Yeah, because it's basically three different categories within one section. That's just too hard. They don't mean the same thing, in my opinion.
Yeah, because remember Merab Dvalishvili was getting thumped by Marlon Moraes?
Oh, yeah.
That's one hell of a comeback. I agree. But I also remember Chris Curtis retiring twice at Mandalay Bay. He lost to Magomed Karamov. And
Cooper.
It was, I believe, a decision, and he's in the back, you know, taking off his gloves. He retired. Magomed Karamov can't go. He was supposed to face Ray Cooper because they fight twice in one night at PFL prior to this last season. And so they go, well, you lost to Magomed Karamov. They weren't going to give it to the guy Ray Cooper just lost to, because he just lost to him. It's a fresh matchup. So he goes, yeah, sure, I'll go out. I guess he negotiated his pay right then and there. Or maybe it's pre-renegotiated, who knows? And then Ray Cooper removed him from consciousness. And so he retired again. And I remember him retiring after Dana White Contender Series when he should have been in. In 2021, Dana White was letting everyone in. I thought he was going to offer Laura Senko a contract once because he was just offering them to everyone. But that year, he was really, really, you know, I don't know. He locked them down. You know, Lockning couldn't get one, and Chris Curtis couldn't get one. Kevin Holland, I believe, couldn't get one those first couple of years. So he retired, I remember, after that. That's three different times I remember him retiring. And then he quietly goes out and goes 6-0 in 2021, including 2-0 in the UFC. And two of those fights in the UFC were at middleweight, and he's a welterweight. But because he was last minute, he was able to step in. Finished them both. Haas, by the way, is 3-0 in the UFC before that loss to Curtis. And then he won this last one. So they were respected middleweights. And remember, Goz, he was also going to have one other fight. Maybe it was Darren Stewart, someone, because there was this whole switcheroo. And then the other guy declined. So even then, Chris Curtis was supposed to be in, and he wasn't. But because he stepped up, the UFC said, now you have a contract. Just wait. And that's when he did. He waited. He fought two times and won two times to go along with the other four. That, to me, is a comeback.
I want, don't quote me on this, but I want to say at PFL, even after that first fight when he retired, I want to say he threw his mouthpiece into the audience or something. So he even had to like borrow somebody's mouthpiece or something.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, I mean, so that to me is just one hell of a comeback, and not that Dvalishvili's comeback was not one hell of a comeback. I just don't see how you can put him in the same category. I feel like you just the nitty gritty award, the rally of the year, the whatever, you know what I mean? The flip the script. I don't know, but you just don't put them all of those in the same category. God forbid had Dominic Cruz and the Korean Zombie had come back in the same year. Like, what do you do there as well? Those are all feel good stories for different reasons. But you know, I've been trying to put my two cents in. We you know we vote. It's a democracy. We vote. But I hate losing those. I'm having a tough time with female fighter of the year as well. I'm not agreeing with most of the staff as well there. So I almost feel like I want to do my own.
Yeah. I think I'm on the side that you don't agree on for female comeback. I think we're on the same side.
You're on Pena's side?
Yeah.
I'm going to go watch Sarah McMahon. If that was a shitty fight, then I know she beat her, and I think it was a split decision.
I think she finished her.
Sarah, did she? Okay. I have to go back and see it. It was an early part of 2021. She gets knocked down by Amanda Nunes twice, I believe. And then Amanda Nunes, to me, just gave up. But Juliana put herself in that position by taking her best punches and putting punches back on Amanda that Amanda hadn't felt in a long time, and then got her on the ground. All that was slick, but there was no submission. You know, there was no rear naked choke.
But she Amanda still broke her. She broke her. So it's not like Amanda Nunes didn't give up because she had something to do. Like, she had a party to go to. She gave up because she got broke by Juliana Pena.
But here's the difference. I was trying to explain it to some of the staff this way. When Holly Holm beat Ronda Rousey, that was a huge upset in terms of the odds and, you know, the great run that Ronda Rousey was on as well. Remember, Ronda had never lost.
Yeah.
Amanda Nunes had lost four times, but Amanda Nunes hadn't lost in a long time. And no one has a problem with calling Amanda the GOAT. I'm just saying the odds were the same, but Holly had a game plan. She stuck to it and she dominated from start to finish. And she had a clean KO with follow-up punches. That to me was an upset, the execution of it all. And that's when you go, that was one hell of a performance. Juliana, I think, happened to be in the right place at the right time against someone who was not their best, because she probably underestimated Juliana Pena and just checked out, gave up, you know, like, I don't know how else to put it. So I feel like Valentina has been like amazing in her two wins against the top contenders who deserve those spots. Sure, she beat the GOAT, but Sarah McMahon's not a top contender, but it's a win. I don't know. I struggle with it a little bit. If it was more like Holly Holmes, I'd probably go, fuck yeah, dude. Holly Holm all day, baby, you know, because that was amazing. Juliana Pena's, she didn't even know she won.
Well, the thing with Holly Holm, though, is before the fight with Ronda, when you go through the check marks, Holly had check marks, right? The striking. She was a way better striker than Ronda. You know, if you said, hey, this fight's only going to take place on the feet, she's going to mop the floor with her. I feel like Juliana had no check marks going into that fight. Like, no ways to win. Where at least we felt like Holly had a way to win. It's just nobody's been able to do it.
I think I remember saying if Juliana Pena can get on top, that they're you know, she's going to have a couple opportunities. I remember saying that. I go, the fight starts on its feet. You got to get her down and hold her down. And she did. She got her down and held her down. But the other girl didn't want to give up. Or sorry, didn't want to get up. But I remember thinking that's one way to possibly do it. Because on the feet, I did not feel like she could do it. To me, it looked like Amanda was in shape. She had abs and everything. But I don't know. I mean, like I say, I just think Valentina had the better year for female fighter of the year. I'm struggling with it, but a few are supporting Rose. A few were supporting Kayla. It's one of the tougher ones. I think Kayla went 4-0 or something like that this year. Pretty amazing, but her competition just isn't as stiff. But it is two extra fights, and she is super dominant. Rose went up against the same opponent two times, won by split in one of them, but viciously KO'd her in the other one. So there's compelling arguments all the way around. Tag us on that as well. I'm at MMA Junkie George. Goes is at the goes. Whatever. Those are probably two of the ones that I'm like, what are you going to do? But is it democracy, and we vote, and we just stand by that, and that's that. Anyway, all right, goes. We have another show to do later in the week. We'll clean up the rest of 2021, but at least we kind of caught up on some of the drama and some of the news.
Yeah, it was fun.
Yep. All right, folks. So please share, retweet. All that is very, very appreciated. And again, on Twitter and Instagram, I'm at MMA Junkie George. Goes is at the goes. The radio show is at MMA Junkie Radio. And check out more on George and Goes over at the YouTube channel, youtube.com/ MMA Junkie Video. We're going to be working on Spinning Backclick and Legend to Legend this week. We got some good stuff coming your way. So check it out. All right, folks. In the meantime, enjoy the rest of the week. And go out there and be a champion.